Okay, hi everyone. I'm Hannah, and I'm going to be talking about how we may be able to understand the impacts of climate variability on a weather-dependent UK power system as we start to increase renewable generation. So, we know that the UK power system is going to become increasingly weather-dependent, as are most that we've heard this week. And as you see, we're planning to invest quite a lot in on and offshore wind, probably more offshore now after recent proposals, and quite a lot of solar power is going to be built. And the effect of that is that our supply is going to become increasingly volatile. So what causes this volatility over England? Well, European weather is dominated by behaviour of the North Atlantic storm track. So you've got storms coming over regularly to Europe, and this will bring periods of high winds, good wind power production. But this storm track location also affects the amount of wind power we might have. So if you have, for example, a positive NAO year, you're going to have a storm track which is kind of more correlated over England and the UK, and therefore higher winds, lower temperatures, and a better situation for wind power than you might otherwise have. Another thing we have quite a lot is we have blocking highs that can come over the UK and create high demand events, and having an understanding of when these happen is important for energy system balancing. So the aim of this project is to understand the impact of interannual climate variability and climate change on a weather-dependent power system. And this is quite important because if you are to just pick one year, say, of weather data to use in a study of a power system, if you happen to pick a year where you had particularly good wind power production, moderate temperatures, you get a very different result than you might get if you had, say, a severe negative NAO where you've got really high demands and really cold temperatures. And it wouldn't prepare you very well for the range of potential peak demands and curtailments you could have. So we want to have a look at what is the impact of this variability. So how do we do this? We have a framework where we take temperatures and wind speeds from the MERA reanalysis. The plan is to take future climate data when we get further into the modelling study, but these are inputs for a demand model and a wind power model, which we then use to feed into a power system model. So I'm not going to say much about the wind power model because Dirk Cannon and Dan Drew both have posters about this in the room next door, posters 12 and 24, if you want to have a look. But basically what it does is it takes the wind speeds and interpolates onto the wind farm locations, and using a log law for your various heights, you get up and then you get your capacity factor time series, which is hourly for the year. So I use three wind power scenarios for this study. We have 15 gigawatts, which we say is around 2015, 30 gigawatts of wind, which is 2020, and then 45 gigawatts, which we say is around 2035. When we get up to the 45 gigawatts, we use the wind power scenario on the far right, which has a lot more offshore wind and very different capacity factors than you would with just more onshore wind. So the demand model is this is daily multiple linear regression. So we're taking the parameters shown here and just regressing them. For this study, we're only using the weather-dependent variables from this model, which the corresponding R-squareds and RMSEs are at the bottom there. But yeah, we're using the seasonal cycle of temperature, temperature anomalies, and a wind chill. The wind chill basically means that if your temperature is below 18 degrees, it starts to matter that it's windy because you feel a bit colder. We're using the weather-dependent version of the model so that when we're looking at variability, it's not variability that's also due to maybe human-induced factors like the day of the week or whether there's a national holiday. We're only looking at the weather-dependent part. So this is daily data. To get it down to hourly, we pass it through basically a daily curve, which is different for each season, just to give it a daily profile. So now we've got the demand model and the wind power models. These feed into our simple power system model. We're using a low-duration curve framework to model this just because it's simple and it's a good way for us to look at, really see the variability that we're getting. So what a low-duration curve basically is a cumulative frequency distribution of, we use demand net wind. So this is your demand minus the wind power. So you're looking at everything that would sit under this curve. The area under would be the units of power you need to meet by your dispatchable generation, so it's of coal, gas, nuclear, etc. So from the Murray analysis, we can generate 33 of these curves, say, from 1980 to 2012, for each of the scenarios that we've got for the wind power. And then we need points of interest to look at here to decide, well, what is important. So the study we're focusing on the peak demand, the curtailment, and then from some basic economic analysis, we've said that our threshold for when baseload plant will operate will be at 91% of the year. So you see there, if you go along the x-axis and then cut up, where the 91% threshold is, there is a range of how much baseload plant you would have installed depending on which year of weather data you've used for your idealised system. And the same for the peaking plant, stuff like open cycle gas turbines. And this range here is bigger, as you can see, but yep, there's a range on this. So for some results, what we've done here is for the three wind power scenarios, the 15, 30 and 45 gigawatts, we've created the 33 load duration curves based on the MERA data. And what I'm showing here is the solid line is the average of all the curves and the two dotted lines are your best and worst demand net wind years. So basically your warmest, windiest year and your coldest, lowest wind year. So as you can see, as you increase the wind power, obviously the mean kind of location of these curves are going down because you've got more wind, so your demand net wind is lower. But the spread between the best and worst years as you put more wind power in starts to become quite predominant. And we've got PDFs on the side of the cut-ins for use, but these are blown up at the bottom to make it a bit easier to see. If you focus on the baseload plant PDF, you see if you've got 15 gigawatts of wind in an idealised system, we don't say this is realistic, but it's idealised, you would have a large chunk of nuclear and you'd be pretty confident of its performance, like how much of it you'd need. But as you increase the amount of wind power, the range of potential use of nuclear increases dramatically and also the mean use of it drops quite a lot. So to put some numbers on this, we see that as you increase wind power, the mean use of conventional plant is reduced. If we start by looking at the peak demand winds, demand net winds, you see that as you increase wind power, the range there increases, but not at anywhere near the rate that the nuclear plant is. And an important point to note here that your range of peak demand rather than peak demand net wind is about 7.2 gigawatts. So having wind power in your system does help your ability to meet peak demand a bit in this scenario. And then when you look at the means, the jump is more profound with the baseload plant there. You're dropping from having maybe 21 gigawatts down to only maybe 2 gigawatts running of nuclear if you have this really large percentage of wind power. So something I haven't mentioned yet is curtailment. Here we've started very simply talking about curtailment as when your wind power is greater than your demand. So for 2015, when we've only got 15 gigawatts of wind power, we will not have any of this because the numbers just don't get big enough. But as you get up to 2035, when there's 45 gigawatts of wind, these numbers start to get reasonably large. But anyone who does real systems modelling will know this would be a gross underestimate because in reality, you have to make sure you have enough synchronous generation on the grid that you can balance the system frequency. So we've put a new constraint in here so that we say that our wind power cannot be greater than 70% of the demand, so that at least 30% of the plant is synchronous, so coal, gas, anything with large moving parts. And what we were interested to look in is when this curtailment was actually taking place and how different it was in the sort of best and worst years compared to average, to look at, is it important that you take this variability into account? So what I've got here is six plots. If you just focus on the top left-hand corner, what this is basically showing you, if you go along the X, you see the hour of the day you're in, and the day of the year is up the Y, and then the colour scheme is just the number of gigawatts of curtailment you would have. And the top is for when your wind power is greater than your demand, and the bottom is when your wind power is greater than 70% of the demand. So as you can see instantly, with your more strict curtailment condition, you have a lot more curtailment. But we see here that if you're only looking at weather-dependent curtailment, it tends to happen in periods of low demand, so overnight. And Another point is that if you take your year, 1990 was our year of most curtailment, which is our strongest NAO year in the scenarios, and 2010 with the least curtailment, they look very different in the hours of curtailment you've got there. So if you were to use maybe just one of these years or the other, you would potentially not be prepared for the other situation. And another point is that the percentage of total UK curtailment as compared to the whole fleet, because we have 45 gigawatts of wind power installed in this scenario, is reasonably small. It's on average sort of 3 gigawatts. So it's not like in this scenario you'd have to be curtailing all the wind power, but you would, so for your wind power greater than 70% of demand, it's common that you'd always have to be curtailing some, which might be costly. So also aware that even this as a curtailment condition is probably a bit weak, because a load duration curve method has no constraints on how these plants run. So we found when we looked at this, a lot of the time it was requiring that nuclear power plants would turn off if you were to look at the actual running of this for maybe 1 or 2 hours so the wind can run, which is not realistic. This is not what would happen. So we imposed another constraint that said, if your nuclear plant would be required to turn off for less than 24 hours, don't do it, curtail the wind instead, to see how much more curtailment this led to. And same sort of plots again. Once again, this is all happening sort of at night. It's at times of low demand where the wind is kind of eating into that nuclear production. But on average, this is a much smaller amount of curtailment than seen before. But I guess the other point is the 1990 and 2010, they look quite different. 1990 has a lot more curtailment at the start of the year, where 2010's is more focused at the end. So yeah, if you are to stack these results on top of each other, you see that if you look at for the average over the period from 1980 to 2012, if you look through the hour of the day with these high penetrations of wind power, this is 45 gigawatts, becomes quite common to have a lot of curtailment. But what I don't have on this plot is the kind of best and worst years, which show that there would be a really big range on how much of curtailment you would use if you include 33 years of data. So where do we want to go for this? Well, I've said that depending on which year of weather data you use, your results are going to be very different. We want to fully assess the meteorological causes of this. So is it to do with your jet positions? Is it to do with maybe a teleconnection indice? We want to have a bit of understanding. So maybe if you were to then look at maybe forecasts for the future, you could maybe have a better estimate of what the power system might start to look like. We want to kind of reverse this problem a bit, because at the moment I have my set thresholds for when plant would operate given variability. We want to reverse this to look at how the economics would change given that we know we have interannual variability. So what is the most economically efficient way to organise our system? And I guess if you're talking about interannual variability, as we've seen in the poster presentation just previously, maybe 33 years is not enough. So what we want to do is take a control run of the climate model HyGEM, and then look at 100 plus more years to see, have we, with our MERA simulation, got to the best, worst and average years, or is there still quite a bit more variability that could be experienced? And from this, with the climate model, we can look at some climate change scenarios to see, under climate change, how does the system change? And also, as we know, we're using a pretty simplified power system model. It might be nice to include solar, as we know that's important to the future UK power system. And then maybe a more advanced system model with some more realistic constraints. So to sum everything up, an increase in the percentage of wind power is going to increase the interannual variability in the way your system operates. On the plus side, wind power can reduce the range of peak demands that would be experienced by the power system. But it does make curtailment increasingly common, and the range of these amounts of curtailment becomes increasingly broad the more wind power you have. So, thank you for listening. I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Anna. Is there any questions? Yeah, please go to the mic.
Yeah, nice talk. So a couple of questions. So do you think the policymakers are properly taking this into account? So, you know, 45 gig of wind for either the curtailment or the capacity payments they'll need to make to keep the lights on when there isn't any wind. So to basically, are they properly taking into account the interannual variability?
I don't think so. So I would say that I don't have much experience with policymakers, but when we look at papers that are looking forward to this, generally everything's done using maybe 5 maximum years of data in the study, and with that I'm not sure that you can really get the full range of potential weather scenarios that could happen. So no, I don't think it's really happening currently.
Jake?
Yeah, thanks for an interesting talk. I thought there were a couple of things. Was one, this could be mitigated by better interconnection with neighbouring countries. So, like, a premise for this study is sort of an isolated island system where the island is United Kingdom, I suppose.
Yeah.
Another thing was that I think nuclear power gets a big advantage in this setting, in that you decide to curtail wind rather than curtail nuclear. Mm. And you say it's down to efficient running of the nuclear plant, but I wonder what is the kind of economics for that argument.
Yeah, first point, I agree. There is quite a big advantage to nuclear here. I think we were trying to use it as a motivation to say plant would need to be more flexible if there is more wind power. For example, if we did give the advantage to nuclear power, it would mean a lot more curtailment of wind. But yeah, I guess you can also look at this from motivation for short-scale storage rather than saying giving nuclear the advantage. You could say, oh, if we could store this wind and allow the nuclear to continue to run. But it was economically based that we continued to let it run, because we assumed that the curtailment payments you'd have to pay would be large, probably, but there was an argument that nuclear power is sold years in advance, so yeah. It's a fact it'd probably already be told it would be running when you got to this point, and maybe you would have to pay it more money again. I'm not an expert on how this works.
So it might depend on the market setup.
I think so, yeah.
But it'd be a shame to be saying no to very cheap electricity.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's my point here. Thanks.
Thank you for your talk. Just a question, naive maybe, about the curtailments. In UK, is it already running, this curtailment system to reduce the production of wind?
Yeah, so we do have curtailment at the moment, and when it happens, it is very expensive. Like, huge payments have to go out to the wind farms to be curtailed, so is a topical question to kind of look at. If the amount of wind increases, that's going to be more money you're going to have to be paying out to turn them off if they have to, because like you say, it's cheap electricity, and it should get priority running if the system can balance it.
Thank you.